offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's Lotus Sweet. The listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem with Hari joining you for this week's session. If you've been a regular listener of our program, you'll know that we are following the 1991 Summer Course series. We've completed 9 chapters of the Summer Showers book, but 9th discourse, the second half, is what we're dealing with. The discourse is on the Mundaka Upanishad and Brahma Vidya, as the title suggests. We played the first clip in that part of that discourse. So before we discuss about what Swami said in that discourse last week, we played, and to continue with that discourse, I invite Hari to join all of us. Saram Hari.
Saram Prem.
I think the standout of last week's was that beautiful explanation that Swami gave on this concept of Angirasa, who's often seen as a sage. If I'm not wrong, even the Atharva Veda is...
Oh yes, that's something I dropped mentioning the last time, that the Atharva Veda, the authorship attributed to
sage Atharva and Angirasa.
Yes,
I think,
right? That's right.
But here Swami was very beautifully saying that, you know, though names are given like this, and stories are woven around such personalities, we should not forget the real meaning of that concept they stand for. And Swami said Angirasa, Anga means the many limbs, and Rasa is the essence which flows through all of these parts of the body.
That's right.
And Swami was equating it to the concept of the Shodashakala Paripurna. That's what Swami said in that discourse.
Yes.
He said one who has achieved that state of completeness of the 16 attributes, which Swami again said, the 5 elements, the 5 pranas, the 5 karmendriyas, jnanendriyas.
That's coming over from the Prashnopanishad, right, the very last...
So Swami says that such a person is Angirasa, and Angirasa is giving this wisdom which Swami was referring to.
Yes, right? Yes. And as we are also mentioning, I think it's important to remember the context in which the Mundaka Upanishad is being delivered.
Right.
In contrast with the Prashnopanishad, in the Prashnopanishad we had celibates and who are come from households which are, you know, given to inquiry into the Brahman.
Right.
So these are the people who come to the sage and inquire with him regarding spiritual questions.
Right.
But over here the context has changed because they are looking at Shaunaka. And Shaunaka is a householder, but one who is given to making sacrifices, performing sacrifices. So he has a spiritual bent of mind. But in a sense, he may not have stepped into the realm of inquiry.
Right.
So which is where the when he comes to sage Angirasa, that is the first thing that he is leading him towards. So that is the context. So the entire Mundaka Upanishad must be seen as a reply to a query from a householder. Like just like, you know, most of us who are here, that is the, you know, so this Mundaka Upanishad that way is very relevant.
Right.
And that is why Swami too, you know, he is having a step up our game here. So when we last time when we discussed, we gave a lot of details as to who sage Angirasa is, his pedigree, that he's the father of sage Brihaspati, who's one of the
Saptarishis,
the 7 great sages.
Also the guru of the Devas.
The guru, yes. Brihaspati is the guru of the Devas, yes. So, but Swami is asking us to look at the word and its inner meaning, right? So that is a hint that actually so many of these stories, while we take it as, you know, real physical people, there is a lot of meaning that we are missing if we do not look at the metaphysical allegory.
I wonder what's the meaning of the name Shaunaka then.
Yeah, that is that's something I think we owe it to our listeners that we do some you know, research into that. Yeah, sure. So Angirasa, as Swami said, no, finally Swami draws out the meaning that this is in fact the embodiment of prajnana, awareness.
Right.
Because prajnana is hailed in fact as in the Vedas as prajnanam brahma. So Swami himself used to speak about it several times. And as we discussed in the last segment, it is also one of his principal teachings that, and what is prajnanam is in Swami's, you know, when he has taught us, he's called it as constant integrated awareness.
Right.
And for that, that is one of the like very important attributes of a sadhaka, that cultivating this constant integrated awareness. So Swami also spoke about the four Mahavakyas, which are mentioned in the Vedas. So many of us are familiar with these, Tattvam Asi, and we just spoke about Prajnanam Brahma. Then we have the I am Atma Brahma, that is, I am Atma and I am the Brahman itself. And Aham Brahmasmi, that I am again the declaration. So these are declarations that on the one hand, they go against our everyday experience. Like we never experience ourselves as being that magnificent, that all-encompassing. But it is born out of the intuition of the sages, what they have seen, and which in the Upanishads as well as in the discourses, Swami is making the effort time and time again to remind in various ways that this truth holds for everyone without exception. Like even when we encountered the concept of the Purusha.
Mm-hmm.
So the Purusha is the one that is endowed with all the 16 attributes, Shodashakalas, and in which they find their full expression.
Mm-hmm.
But Swami says, even as the Upanishads echo the same thing, that this Purusha is not a distinct personality.
Right.
It is in fact within you. You are in fact that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the teaching of the Vedas. Like, so. Right. Again, so these declarations, affirmations, that Tattvamasi, Prajnanam Brahma, are to be taken as such, that this they are affirming your true nature, and from time to time when you drift, when you deviate, it is for you to do mananam, you sit and think over, churn it in your mind as to why, how do these statements hold true for each one of us.
Right.
And how do now we make our actions, our everyday actions consistent with that.
I think that's the key when Swami was explaining about Angirasa, the concept of Angirasa, because as you're saying that here is a aspirant, the aspirant has desire to know, probably a bit of eagerness to progress, and here is somebody who's probably on the other end of the spectrum, who knows, and Swami says it's not just knowledge, it's prajna, it's constant integrated awareness.
Right.
That knowledge is every moment. And I think that is the essence of when Swami is saying that prajna is the power or witness that pervades the body, senses, mind and inner instruments.
Mm.
He's saying that knowledge is there and that knowledge is completely mixed with your karmendriyas and jnanendriyas. So
that's
whatever
right.
you do, whatever you speak, the way you respond to everything else comes from that knowledge.
Mm.
So here is somebody who probably knows that. You know, when yesterday when we were just sitting and few of our friends were talking, we went into a very philosophical discussion of Atma and all of that.
Mm.
And finally we came back to that. You know, we theoretically know all of this, but prajnana is that, what Swami says, constant integrated awareness.
Mm.
How much are you able to live that knowledge throughout? So here is Angirasa who is an example of that, who's trying to teach one who is only having the aspiration and probably limited knowledge about all of this.
Hmm.
And he's leading him on. I think that is the essence of that.
Correct.
And I remember, I think, during the 72 summer course, you should, many of our listeners who regularly listen would have heard that story.
Hmm.
We played that discourse many times.
Hmm.
Swami says one Chinnakatha.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably one of the longest Chinnakathas I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on for 15-20 minutes.
Mm.
It very beautifully, Swami gives this idea of what is prajna, what is it to live that knowledge of a story of a prince who goes into a hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sage and the sage asks him, who are you?
Mm.
So he says, I am the prince of Jitendriya Rajyam.
Mm.
He says, and my father's name is Jitendriya.
Mm.
And I'm his son, who's Prince Jitendriya.
Mm.
So then the sage thinks, okay, it's a fancy name that you kept for yourself in your kingdom, but wonder how true it is.
Mm.
So then the prince says, no, actually my father is like that only.
Mm.
He is a Jitendriya.
Mm.
Not only my father, every subject in our kingdom is like that.
Mm.
They've conquered their senses,
and
that's why we've named our kingdom Jitendriya.
Mm.
And he says, even I'm also like that. So then the sage says that, let me find out.
Mm.
So he says, okay, give me all your princely robes and wear my ascetic robes. So he takes those princely clothes and he kills an animal, and that blood he splashes on these the prince's clothes, and he takes it to the kingdom.
Mm.
And he goes and cries in front of the gate saying that your prince came for hunting and he was killed by an animal.
Mm.
So I brought his clothes to inform the king.
Mm.
So the man at the gate smiles and he says, oh, for this you have come all the way. Okay, fine, come inside. So then he goes inside, then he goes to the king, and he tells the king that this is what has happened. The king is very calm and pleased, and the way Swami explains the same concept with different analogies. So Swami says, the king tells him that we are all like birds sitting on a tree. Okay, and different birds fly off at different times. Okay, and we are together as long as we are sitting in that. I mean, my sitting is coinciding with somebody else's sitting. So he says, this bird which happens to be born to this body is flown away. What is there to cry about that?
Right.
Okay, so this man thinks that probably the king has many children and this is not the fondest of them. So he goes to the queen and he cries there. Okay, and then the queen tells him, let's see, when we are all on a pilgrimage, we are all journeying towards our destination. So when on a pilgrimage we come from different regions, at some places there are shal trees where we stay together. Okay, then we continue our journey. Just because we have slept over in one place under one roof for one night, that doesn't make us bound to each other. He says, when the journey takes a different course, you have to move on. So he says, this pilgrim has gone ahead. So why should I cry for that? So that each of these, the wife says a different thing. Then he goes to the people and people give them a different thing. So then finally the sage says, yes, you really deserve this title. Your kingdom and all your people deserve this title. So Swami is saying that is what it is, you know. And I think later in the discourse, Swami also says that. You've all been given names so that someday you will live up to it. You know, you've all given God's names, given names like, what is it to reach that state of highness?
Correct, yes. So that's a really wonderful way in which Swami has brought out this principle of detachment. You know, like, so we all need to, we all check in and check out at our own time from this, from Hotel Earth. So, so, you know, like, I think the beauty of this is something that we can easily relate on. Even as you were speaking to me, you know, I could feel that penetrate right through, right? That immediately you get that sense of detachment, a sense of perspective.
I can tell you it's only 5% of how Swami narrates it. You know how dramatic he can get when he narrates it. I mean, he really draws you in. I think that is the power of story more than anything else. The reason why we are talking of Angirasa as a personality, as a sage who's, who has a son, whose son is so-and-so, father is so-and-so, because that's the power of a story, I think. You know, even for a simpleton, it, I'm not saying that you are one, I'm saying in general.
I wish I had that title.
You know, the, it kind of has the ability to seep into any kind of intellectual level that we are in.
That's right.
Then I think... I think we stopped at the point where Swami is talking about these four Mahavakyas. He's saying that these are pregnant with meaning. In fact, the interesting thing is, you know, when you look at, probably just before we progress, these four Mahavakyas, and each of them comes from one of the Vedas. And if you look at what is that Veda supposed to stand for, and what is this Mahavakya, it's almost like the distillation of the aspiration. Or the beginning, the quest, finally ends up in this. For instance, the Prajnanam Brahma is from the Rig Veda. Right? And Rig Veda is all about glorifying this one Purusha that you know, people are worshipping. He's saying that you're so glorious, the mind cannot reach you, I cannot speak about you, you have the light of a thousand suns, and all of that is glorification. It's almost like the aspirant is saying that even to know you is a blessing. And the essence of that, which is given in the Mahavakya, is that knowledge itself is Brahman. It's not that you're knowing something or through knowing you're going to get somewhere. That knowledge itself is Brahman. Prajnanam Brahma. Like for the other one, if you see, Samaveda is supposed to be the similar thing. You're going on praising the ultimate as a different entity. And then it ends up with Tattvamasi. That the one you're glorifying is actually one with you. You know, that you finally come to that realization, or even the other one of what comes from Atharva Veda of I am Atma Brahma. It's all about ways of protecting yourself. Atharva Veda is, you know, Ayurveda, medicine, the weaponry, all of that comes in Atharva Veda. You come to the point of I am Atma Brahma, saying that you're not the body and the mind and the fame which can be affected. You're something which is beyond all of this. It's almost like you start with one motive in your mind. The Mahavakya is that you finally reach and you, you know, come the full circle.
Where you completely, in a sense, absorbed what the what they're talking about. They're talking about Purusha. You dwelt in it so much, and then the denouement comes in. in surprise you realize that, oh, like that's me. It's like being shown a mirror and described the image.
Right.
Then finally you made aware that that's you.
Right.
Yes, I like that. That was a very nice explanation. Right.
Yeah. So we'll go to the next clip. Yeah. We actually played a few seconds of that clip, but we'll begin that from the beginning.
Yeah. Sure.
So that I think the continuation will be there.
ఈ ప్రజ్ఞానం అనేటువంటిది దేహమునందు మనసునందు అంతఃకరణయందు ఇంద్రియములయందు ప్రాణములయందు ఈ యొక్క కర్మల యందు కూడా అన్నింటి యందు కూడా నువ్వు లీనమై ఉంటుండాలి.
ద ప్రజ్ఞాన ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ద బాడీ ద మైండ్ సెన్సెస్ అండ్ ద లైఫ్ లివ్స్ ఆల్ ఓవర్ ద బాడీ.
కనుకనే దీనిని ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ అని వేదము లోపల ప్రధానమైన సారంగా భావిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దేర్ఫోర్ ది ఎసెన్స్ ఇస్ సెట్ ఇన్ వేద ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ.
నాలుగు వేదముల యొక్క ప్రధానమైనటువంటి సూత్రములు నాలుగు.
దట్ ద వాట్
ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ,
ద నెక్స్ట్ ప్రజ్ఞానం బ్రహ్మ,
అయమాత్మ బ్రహ్మ,
ద నెక్స్ట్ అయమాత్మ బ్రహ్మ,
అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి,
ద ఫైనల్ వన్ ఇస్ అహం బ్రహ్మాస్మి.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సూత్రములన్నీ కూడాను అనంతమైనటువంటి అర్థములతో కూడి,
సచ్ థీరీస్ విత్ ఇన్ఫినిట్ మీనింగ్,
కేవలం మానవుని ఎందే కూడాను ఇవన్నీ కూడాను అంతర్భూతమై ప్రవహిస్తూ ఉంటున్నాయి.
దే ఆర్ కంటిన్యూయస్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్ అండ్ ఫ్లో ఇన్సెసెంట్లీ.
మానవుడు దేనిని తెలుసుకోవాలన్నను
వాట్ ఎవర్ దట్ మ్యాన్ డిసైడ్స్ టు
నో, బయటికి పోయి తెలుసుకోనక్కర్లేదు.
హీ నీడ్ నాట్ నో అవుట్
గ్రంథముల ద్వారా తెలుసుకోనక్కర్లేదు.
హీ నీడ్ నాట్ సర్చ్ ఇన్ టెక్స్ట్.
అన్ని తన ఎందే ఉంటున్నది.
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇస్ కంటైన్డ్ విదిన్ హిమ్.
తన ఎందే ఉండినటువంటి సర్వస్వాన్ని తాను విస్మరించి,
హి హస్ ఫర్గాటన్ దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ కంటైన్డ్ విత్ హిమ్.
ఏదో బయట ఉన్నది అనేటువంటి సర్వస్వమును తానికి అర్పింప చేసుకుని,
హి సరెండర్స్ హింసెల్ఫ్ థింకింగ్ దట్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇస్ కంటైన్డ్
విత్ హిమ్ గురి అయిపోతుంది.
అండ్ హి సబ్జెక్ట్ టు ఫ్రస్ట్రేషన్ డిసప్పాయింట్మెంట్ దేర్ ఆఫ్టర్.
తాను పోగొట్టుకున్నది ఒక చోటు, వెతకటం మరొక చోటు.
హీ లాస్ట్ ఎట్ వన్ స్పాట్ అండ్ సర్చెస్ ఎట్ అనదర్ ప్లేస్.
చిక్కుతుంది ఆ పదార్థం తన.
హౌ డస్ హీ హోప్ టు గెట్ ఇట్.
కనుక నిరాశకు గురి అయిపోతుంది.
దేర్ఫోర్ హీ ఇస్ డిసప్పాయింటెడ్.
ఎక్కడ పోగొట్టుకున్నాడో అక్కడ పోయి వెతకాలి.
హీ షుడ్ సర్చ్ ఫర్ ఇట్ వేర్ హీ లాస్ట్.
అన్ని తన ఇండే ఉంటున్నవి.
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇస్ కంటైన్డ్ విత్ ఇన్ హిమ్.
కనుక తన ఇండే వెతకాలి తాను.
సో హీ షుడ్ సర్చ్ విత్ ఇన్.
అప్పుడే ఈ దివ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క తన యొక్క ప్రకాశవంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రజ్ఞ తనకు లభిస్తుంది.
Then only he can hope to capture that divine feeling in all effulgence.
ఈ అక్షరము అనేటువంటి యొక్క పదమునందే సర్వమును ఇమిడి ఉంటుంది.
Everything is contained in this word అక్షర.
అనగా అనిత్యమైనటువంటిది నిత్యమైనటువంటిది రెండింటి యొక్క ఏకత్వమే ఈ అక్షరము.
Meaning it is a combination of that which is temporary and permanent.
ఇక్కడ రెండు భాగములుగా మనం విభజించుకుందాం.
Here we can classify it into two categories.
Chara. Chara.
Here there are two aspects. One is A, the other one is Chara.
A. Anantamainatuntidi.
A means Ananta infinite.
Aprameyamainatuntidi.
That which is unparalleled.
Apramanamainatuntidi.
It beyond all measure.
అదే ఆనందమయమైనటువంటిది.
దట్ ఈస్ బ్లిస్ఫుల్.
అదే ఆత్మ.
దట్ ఈస్ ఆత్మ.
అదే నిత్యమైనటువంటిది.
దట్ ఈస్ ఎటర్నల్.
ఇంకా చరా అనిత్యమైనటువంటిది, అసత్యమైనటువంటిది.
దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ టెంపరీ అండ్ ఫాల్స్.
ప్రమాణము లేనటువంటిది.
ఇట్స్ సకంపరమనగా
నశించేటువంటిది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ షూర్ టు డిసపియర్.
కనుక చరమనగా నశించేది, సకారమనగా ఎప్పుడూ నశించనిది. ఈ రెండింటి యొక్క చేరికనే అక్షరం. నశించనిది, నశించినది, రెండింటి యొక్క ఏకత్వమే అక్షరం.
ద మిక్స్చర్ ఆఫ్ దాట్ విచ్ డిసపియర్స్ దాట్ విచ్ డస్ నాట్ ఈస్ కాంబినేషన్ ఆఫ్ దట్ ఈస్ అక్షర.
నాట్ మిక్స్చర్,
ద కాంబినేషన్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్, మర్జర్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్.
కనుక రెండింటి యొక్క ఏకత్వమే,
ది యూనిటీ ఆఫ్ దీస్ టూ.
అక్షరం అనుకుంటే కేవలం ఒక పదంగానే మనం విభజించుకుంటున్నాం.
వీ థింక్ ఇట్ యాజ్ వన్ వర్డ్ అక్షర.
కాదు కాదు, ఇది రెండు పదములుగా మనం విభజించుకోవాలి.
నో, యాక్చువల్లీ ఇట్ హాస్ టూ కాంపౌండ్.
అనిత్యమైన జగత్తు,
దట్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ విచ్
నిత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క పరమాత్మలోనే ఉంటుంది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ కంటైన్డ్ ఇన్ డివిన్.
పరమాత్మను వదలి జగత్తు ఉండలేదు.
దేర్ కెనాట్ బి వరల్డ్ విత్
జగత్తును వదలి పరమాత్ముడు ఉండలేడు.
గాడ్ విల్ నాట్ బి సపరేట్ ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ వరల్డ్.
భక్తుడు భగవంతుని సృష్టిస్తున్నాడు.
It is devotee who creates God.
భగవంతుడు భక్తుని సృష్టిస్తున్నాడు.
God creates devotee.
నీ అనుకుంటావు ప్రజలంతా కూడా నువ్వు జీవులంతా భగవంతుడే సృష్టిస్తున్నాడని.
బట్ వీ థింక్ దట్ గాడ్ క్రియేట్స్ ఆల్ బీయింగ్.
కాదు కాదు, భక్తుడు కూడాను తన యొక్క సాధనా సంపత్తి వల్ల భగవంతుని కూడాను సృష్టించుకుంటున్నాడు.
Devotee with all his spiritual practices can create God.
అదే సాక్షాత్కారము అని.
దట్ ఈస్ ది మీనింగ్.
సాక్షాత్కారం ఎక్కడ నుంచి వస్తుంది? అది భక్తుని యొక్క భావోద్రేకము చేతనే దానిని ఆవిర్భవింపు చేసుకుంటున్నాడు.
How do you hope to get the sakshatkara? It is just the reflection of
sakshatkaram, sakshatkaram.
The actual form, the appearance of actual form is sakshatkara.
Kanukane bhagavantuniki srishtikarta bhaktude.
Therefore, the one that caused the reason
behind the creation of God is bhagavantude.
The devotee is created by God.
Kanukane ఈనాడు భక్తుడు ఆ సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించుకోలేకపోవటం చేత
టుడే దట్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ ఈస్ నాట్
భగవంతుడు ఎక్కడ 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 అని వెతుకుటానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తున్నాడు.
Therefore he makes an effort in search of God where he is available.
ఎంత అజ్ఞానం.
What a sort of ignorance.
సర్వత్రా నిండినటువంటి భగవంతుణ్ణి వెతికేది ఎక్కడ?
When God is all pervasive, where do you want to search for him?
కనుక నీవు భగవంతుని వెతుకుతున్నావు అనుకోవటం భ్రాంతి.
It's only your illusion if you say that you are in search of God.
Bhagavantude nijamaina bhaktuni vetukutu unnadu.
In fact, God himself is in search after a true
devotee. Nijamaina bhaktudu ekkada untunnado kanipinchatam ledu.
Because a true devotee is not seen by God himself.
Ee yokka vicharana shakti edi chestu vachindi.
Such a spirit of inquiry, what is it that does?
Adi ye Tyagaraja chakkaga gurtinchadu.
That fact is realized by Tyagaraja.
Himalo brahmano shivakeshavadavalalo ప్రేమ మీద వెలిసి ఉండే బిరుదు వహించిన రామా నన్ను బ్రోవర అన్నాడు. అనగా సీమలోనే ఉన్నాడు, బ్రహ్మలోనే ఉన్నాడు.
హీస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ యాంట్ అండ్ ఆల్సో ఇన్ బ్రహ్మ.
ఈ చీవ చేసే పని ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ దట్ యాంట్ డస్?
ఇంత ఇసుకను తెచ్చి రెండు ముక్కలు చక్కెర దాంతో కలిపి పెట్టేస్తే ఇసుకునంతా దూరం చేసి ఆ చక్కెరను మాత్రమే స్వీకరిస్తుంది చీమ.
When you bring lot of sand and mix some sugar there, that ant will be able to separate sugar from the sand.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి విచారణ శక్తి చీమ ఎందే ఉంటుండగా మానవుని ఎందుకు క్షీణించిపోయింది?
When that sense of discrimination is there in ant, how is it that you find it absent, missing in man?
కనుక అనోరణీయాన్ మహతో మహీయాన్.
Therefore, from microcosm to macrocosm.
ఈ రెండింటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని మనం చక్కగా అర్థం చేసుకోవాలి.
We should understand the nature of these two clearly.
That was the next clip in that discourse. I think a very, very profound concept which Swami was talking about. It's so very beautifully explained. You know, Swami was talking about prajnanam and aham atma brahma and aham atma brahma. From where did, you know, it so effortlessly flowed into devotion, searching for God.
Yeah.
And somebody like Tyagaraja and the way he looked at it.
Yeah, like Swami is like taking up a different thread here. And as Swami usually does, he'll connect it at the end. So, we got to first, I think, take note of where we are standing now. Is Swami has brought up regarding the constant integrated awareness, prajnanam. And then we are moving now to the concept of akshara. So akshara in Sanskrit, as in many Indian languages, it simply means word.
Right.
Usually the written word.
Letters.
Yeah. Akshara, the written word. Yeah. Right. Letter or yeah. Correct. So but Swami is now delving deep into the meaning, like of the word itself.
Right.
So the interesting thing is, as Swami brings out later in the discourse, now akshara is a combination of a plus kshara. And in that Swami patiently explains that a stands for that which is infinite, right? Anantam, aprameya. Swami says that this is something that cannot be measured,
right?
And which is apramana, which is beyond proof. Now that is like something we've many of us rationalists have to settle with the fact that it is beyond the realm of our rational explanation. So that is what a stands for, that is infinite, beyond measure and beyond proof. Then on the other hand, we have what is kshara, which is temporary, false, illusory and perishable. You know, something that can be erased.
Right.
Right. So, generally what we think is, therefore, the word akshara, like in typical meaning, like it would mean something which is indestructible.
Right.
But here, it's a very subtle thing here, Swami is pointing out, and very, very important to pay attention, that the word akshara does not mean, you know, that destruction is not part of it. Swami says akshara includes even destruction.
Right.
So then we got to pay attention to what does then the word akshara stand for? Like, why is Swami talking about it? And Swami says, like, this is the combination of these two. as in two disjoint things have been brought together, and at that interface is where, you know, the creation happens, the world happens, right? The interface between something that is beyond, that is infinite, with something that is destructible, that which perishes, that which is limited.
Right.
Right. And Swami says, like, that is the true meaning of this word, Akshara.
Right. It's always like the concept which Swami is talking of in, even in Keno Upanishad, the discourse on that.
Hmm.
Swami is talking about the duality.
Right.
You know, the inert and the conscious.
Correct.
The prana and the prani.
Yes.
The container and the contained. Swami is saying that the combination, you can never remove from one from the other.
Yes. Not only are they dual, they are paradoxical. These are like two juxtaposed concepts in our mind which are being brought together, the infinite and the finite. And because what we noted was during the translation, the translator actually says mixture. But Swami suddenly stops and he corrects him, saying we are not talking about mixture. This is a bringing together of two disjoint things. There is in the finite, there is no infinite, and in the infinite, there is no finite. But these two are somehow magically, miraculously coming together in what we are experiencing as the world. So that is a very important distinction, very deep distinction. In fact, it, like, I was left with my head shaking, wondering how easily, you know, in a flow. It's as if like something very, very abstruse, difficult concept.
Mm.
And Swami is making it so palatable that, you know, it's just consuming it just like that.
The beauty is, of course, as you were saying, that there is a different line that Swami is taking here.
Mm.
But going from what Swami said before this, Swami is talking about where would you find what you have lost. Right? Swami is telling, where do you look?
Correct.
So Swami is saying that you lose it at one place and you search for it in another place. And Swami is talking about the absurdity of that. Then finally, you know, suddenly Swami speaks of this concept of Akshara, suggesting that you don't have to look anywhere outside.
Correct.
You look for the infinite inside the finite.
Correct.
It is contained in the finite. You know,
right.
That is again a concept which probably, you know, we can think of the finite being contained in the infinite. Right?
Yeah.
But there Swami is saying that it's not like one is contained in the other, or it's mixed together or something. But when you're searching for it, it can be found within you. And that is the same thing of this concept of Akshara, which is the finite, which is your body, contains in it that which is Akshara, which is infinite. Right? The Akshara is actually containing the Akshara within.
Right.
So Swami is saying, look for it inside. So what the search should lead you inside.
Mm.
So after explaining this concept briefly about this Akshara, which Swami, as you're saying, will come back to later. And Swami again continues with this thing of devotee and God are a pair. So it's God who can it's a devotee who can make the God manifest.
Just as the Atma and the, like, that which is destructible, these two form an inseparable pair.
Right.
And Swami says, like, the God and the devotee, or the God and an individual, they are a pair. Yes. And you were saying,
right,
so in that sense Swami says, it's a beautiful thing. Swami says that devotee creates God. Perhaps only God is a person who can say this. But
get away with it.
So the devotee creates God, and God creates the devotee. And Swami says that we think God has created all beings. Now this is something really very audacious to you know, for us to hear. But Swami says that we think, in our common thinking, that God has created all beings. And Swami says it is the devotee that creates God. And in the process, of materializing God to appear in the physical form. Like, and this is something which finds echo in many of our scriptures. That when we say, so the common answer that is given to somebody who is searching for a guru. Like, so in common parlance, we look at, you know, somebody goes into the Himalayas, or he approaches different ashrams, and they are looking for the right guru for themselves. Right? But in fact, we are told that it is the opposite. It is the guru who is in search of a devotee, and he finds. It is the guru who finds the devotee. And just like, you know, we are sitting in the Kulwant Hall, it is Swami who walks over to us when it is time for the Padnamaskar. So how much? Definitely, we make our efforts. We, you know, whatever we can, different ways we try to please Swami. But ultimately, it is Swami who walks over and grants the Padnamaskar. He asks us to sit exactly where we are, and that he will come to our place. So the effort that we have to make is in this kind of inquiry, this kind of prayer, this creating that deservedness. But ultimately it is the guru that finds the devotee. Also, another way of looking at it, I was just thinking even as Swami was speaking, and Swami himself has often said that Swami is the Purnavatar, or Swami is God, because for that person, that when we say so, right? Like we, even though his innate nature may be divinity, and you know, somebody whose very nature is love, whose very nature is miraculous, and yet unless the opposite person, he accepts that this is the avatar, this is the guru, for him it is not true. Like for us, for a devotee, it is very much true. We take it as a, you know, there's something that need not be debated. And so now it is up to us, you know, the benefit we derive from Swami's presence is completely based on that, whether we accept him as divinity itself, or as most of the people would just say, yeah, he's like anybody else, humanitarian who does, you know, great projects. So that is what they, for them, Swami is. But that's the limited benefit, there's a limited inspiration you derive from Bhagwan. So it's a very profound thing, like it takes a lot of time to dwell into it. It's maybe areas we would certainly not like to tread on. But Swami very beautifully puts it over here, that Swami in a sense becomes our guru when we treat him so. And it's up to us, he's not affected by whether we treat him as a guru or divinity or, you know, whatever it is. Because he knows who he is. That's unshakable.
Reminded of something which probably is not exactly related to what you're saying, but you know, as you're saying, sometimes Swami acknowledges, like, yeah, for you I'm God, but you know, others might not know, you know.
Exactly.
Sometimes you would hear Swami saying that.
Yes.
I remember when Swami was here in the studio inaugurating it, Swami very casually asked, so who's going to take care of all of this? Okay, who's going to take care of all of you? Boys were blinking for some time. They said, Swami, you're going to take care. Swami, that is spiritually. You know, almost Swami acknowledging, yes, spiritually, that is my responsibility. And Swami realized that they're not getting the point. So Swami asked, who is the watchman for this place?
So
the moment Swami said, watchman, then you couldn't say, you know, Swami, you will be the watchman. Then I think all the boys look at Venkatraman sir. He said, he's the caretaker.
Right.
So Swami said, spiritually, I am there. But to take care of this place, you need an elderly person, responsible person. He is there.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that is what it is. I mean, though it is probably stretching it a little bit, that even what you talk of prajnana, I think one point which Swami is repeatedly coming to is, knowledge is one thing, to know is one thing, but that knowledge starts getting transformed into wisdom or prajnana or that realization when it starts seeping into these, you know, 16 attributes,
right,
of which the mind and the senses are part. So Swami would say that, you know, Bhagya sir was telling once that apparently Swami was, I'm sorry, speaking, standing on the portico and speaking to some students and some VIPs, where one of the elderly people came up to Swami and, you know, as is the habit with most of us, he started praising Swami. He said, Swami, your divinity, your Parabrahman and this and that. And Swami was actually ignoring him a bit and continuing with the conversation with the people around. But this person was, you know, relentless. He was going on and on. So almost in frustration, you know, Swami picked up the handkerchief and crumpled the whole handkerchief and held it in his hand and let out just the tip of the handkerchief. And Swami showed it and said, Inte telso meer andaruku. He said, all of you know only this much of Swami. And Swami let go of the remaining handkerchief and said, this much is there yet to know. He said, you have no idea who I am, so don't tell this.
Exactly.
Okay. He said, you have no idea who I am. So Bhagya sir was there, he immediately fell at Swami's feet and said, Swami, what should we do to know? Okay. I mean, it seems to be cruel to be in the presence of somebody who is so grand and with all your knowledge, you know, only a bit of it. So he said, Swami, what do we do to know who you really are? He said, one simple sadhana is there. And he said, every day, morning or whenever you get time, remind yourself, Swami is God, Swami is God, Swami is God. So for that moment, he said, but we all know, you know, we know it, Swami is God. So then when he contemplated on that, he said that is actually the only thing which is we are falling short of.
Correct.
That when you know Swami is God, the way you look at every action is different.
Precisely.
The way you look at the place will be different.
Hmm.
The way you look at every interaction will be different.
Correct.
So that reminder, as you were saying, that, you know, that when a devotee says that he is God and I know it, and Swami was saying that Sakshatkara is Sakshat, you make him appear in front of you through your faith.
Correct. Mm.
And that faith is actually this ability to put knowledge and in expression completely without any gap.
Exactly. Mm. It's very much like, see, the Guru exists in the language of the devotee. When he's, literally when he says so.
Mm.
And just like, you know, Ekalavya, he did not need Drona's physical presence, but he benefited so much from accepting him mentally as his guru. And that guided him to such heights of excellence, which Arjuna, you know, derived from being directly in the presence of Drona.
Mm.
Right? So, that is a distinction. So, it is not the, so much so, like Swami is reminding us, not so much the guru as such, but the fact that you called him the guru. Right? That makes the difference as far as you are concerned. It makes no difference to the guru. For the very longest time, Drona was not even aware that he had a disciple named Ekalavya. So it was Ekalavya who derived that benefit from considering Drona as his guru.
Mm.
And that is at the physical level. Drona, I mean, Ekalavya learnt archery. But for us, you know, we have Bhagwan as a presence. Now, there are so many, as I said, so many different ways to look at Bhagwan. You know, it's such a multifaceted this thing, existence, being, that we could limit Swami, as we said, you know, as a, so many of us tend to take him as the somebody who's running the charitable trust. So some might say, no, he's like a friend or he's a family member, because he used to be, you know, he used to call us for interviews, used to take small decisions in our this one. So that is a beautiful closeness, proximity that you enjoyed with Bhagwan. But ultimately, it is like up to us, like how huge, you know, we can accept Bhagwan as.
Exactly.
How magnificent we can accept Bhagwan as. And again, that is of no benefit to Swami. The entire benefit is drawn by the devotee.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, Swami says that in a conversation with, I think, Dr. Hislop, when he asked Swami, what if a person ends up with a guru who is not genuine? Because he is one person who is gone around, met a lot of holy people and tried to get initiated into spiritual practices. So he says, what happens if an aspirant ends up with a guru who is not genuine?
Correct.
Swami said, if his earnestness is perfect,
right,
then he will attain it.
Got it.
It doesn't matter whether the guru is genuine or not, the guru is telling him the right things or not.
Yes.
He said, as long as you have the Shraddha, the earnestness,
beautiful,
you will reach it.
Yes. Time and again, Prem, like many people, when they tend to ask the same thing, right? There's so many paths on spirituality. We've answered this, I think a devotee had actually asked us through an email. Like, you know, so ultimately, it just comes down to earnestness. The earnestness takes care of the devotee. And that is the very important thing I think all of us must remember. Again, earnestness towards what? That again the Upanishads point out, like you could have earnestness towards you know, improving or ameliorating your immediate situation, asking God very earnestly that my finances must improve, my health or people around me must benefit. That is certainly and gladly God will grant it. Like. But again, like where is our earnestness? You know, what are we diverting our energies towards? And so it always must elevate. It's perfectly fine. As Swami says, I give you what you desire, so that at one point of time you will desire what I have come to give. And if we can accelerate that process, that would be, you know, the our helping Bhagwan along the way.
And then of course Swami goes on to speak about the omnipresence of God, and you know, makes a reference to Saint Tyagaraja. It's a beautiful thing. Where, you know, he says, "You why search for God when He's everywhere?"
Right.
It's your delusion that tells you that it is necessary to search for God. It reminds me of that explanation of Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, which Swami gave in the previous clip, where you're saying Anantam is God cannot be described as He is here and He is not there. So He is Anantam. Very poetically, Swami put it. So he's saying that it's delusion which makes you believe that God is not here, He's elsewhere, I need to go and find Him.
Correct.
He said, the moment that delusion goes, you first of all stop searching for him elsewhere.
Hmm.
And then I think it's just a matter of time before your search turns fruitful.
True. Because one of the things that I was thinking, why does Swami grant you the experience of miracles?
Mm-hmm.
Like I recall that when I first joined as a student, uppermost on my mind was that my mother, she was suffering from arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And uppermost in my mind was somehow I have to convey to Bhagwan and he has to cure her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would try in various ways, I'd write a letter and I would show it to Swami and he would not take it. And as for 2 weeks, wondering like how do I convey to Swami this is the pain which my mother is undergoing, this is the anxiety that I have for that reason. And I then finally someday, purely by Swami's grace, I got a chance. Swami was speaking something to me. In between, I interjected, Swami, I have a prayer. I want to convey this. My mother is not well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said only that much. Swami looked at me, he said, yes, I know, she has rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And the entire history, first when the joint pain started, mm-hmm. we took her to the doctors and they first diagnosed it as rheumatism.
Mm-hmm.
And then again we went for a second opinion and they said it is arthritis. Mm-hmm. And finally the treatment which the ultimate diagnosis was rheumatoid mm-hmm. arthritis. So that was the final diagnosis. So Swami went through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. He said first they said rheumatism, then they said arthritis, isn't it? And I was so shocked. I literally, you read all the scriptures, so much Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, everything you read, and you're convinced
mm-hmm.
in your mind that Swami is omnipresent, yes. omnipotent. But when when Swami gives you, delivers a proof of that, your mind cannot take it.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember my expression, I just told Swami, you know everything. And the very interesting thing Swami did, just like how teenagers do a hi-fi. So mm-hmm. my hand was, extended out, like mm-hmm. this, pointing towards Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami just, hit it. Yes, I know, he said.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that it is for us to really understand that time and again we are drawn by this world, by mm-hmm. our experiences, into imagining that each one of us is confined into this body, that our existence is entirely as, this mm-hmm. psyche called Hari Shankar, this body called Hari Shankar. But then Swami comes, so first we regard him as a distinct personality. So if I am inside this body and he is inside that body,
mm-hmm.
but he destroys that mm-hmm. notion immediately, that there's something, you're limiting yourself.
Right.
And just as I am able to, literally live inside you. I know mm-hmm. everything that is, going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because I don't regard myself as distinct from you.
Mm-hmm.
Just as natural it is for you to remember what happened with you, for me too it is, because I don't regard my existence as mm-hmm. separate. Mm-hmm. And that is the beautiful thing, as now it literally comes full circle, because up to now Swami was trying to convey to us how prajnanam is like awareness, and how Purusha, all of these are immanent within us.
Mm.
But here we'll sort of come to familiar territory and we're able to link it up, because Swami is saying that God, that divinity is within you. And as has been, luckily we live in a land where that is literally something that is drummed into you from childhood.
Mm.
Through various songs and scriptures, it is something that we are told repeatedly, that divinity is immanent within you.
Mm.
It is immanent in the universe, but time and again it's drummed into us that is you. So
right.
Even through a simple little song, Saint Tyagaraja's, Brahmalo, Chimalo, Brahmalo, Shiva Keshava Ladulo. So the important thing here is, again, Swami delineating what divinity is, how is it present. And Swami says the way it manifests, that divinity, when it is present in you and when you express it, expresses itself as love. And that is very important, because again, sometimes we are drawn into so many different routes. So mm-hmm. when we seek divinity, perhaps we think of divinity as being powers, various powers of, say, manifestation, omnipresence, mm-hmm. that we get to know what the other person is mm-hmm. thinking, or we can create things at will. So Swami says, look for love. When that divinity is manifesting, mm-hmm. when you are able to manifest that divinity, it comes across as love itself.
Mm.
Don't get diverted by the other things that manifest.
Mm. And I think one one thing probably is, unless we see this outside of us, we probably don't, you know, recognize this. I mean, even when you see that Swami expressed his omnipotence or omniscience, unless you see it outside you, you don't look for it within you. You need some kind of attention grabbing thing happening.
Some jolt.
Right, jolt in front of you. That's what happens, as you're saying.
Yeah.
We all have come to Swami because we know that he's omnipresent, omniscient and omnipotent, all of that. But when it happens in front of you, that's when you really wake up to that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You probably have so subtly accepted that, but you really, your entire being wakes up to that understanding when something like that happens in front of you.
Mm.
And you say, and I think that is what it is which Swami is trying to say. In fact, a classic example which they generally say is apparently during one of the Shivratris, Swami materialized a diadem and he placed it on that silver statue which he used to do Abhishekam for, the Shirdi Baba statue. So I think it was Bhagwantam only who was there in the audience. And he was going on wondering, how is this piece of metal sticking on that piece of metal without any adhesive?
Yes.
Because Swami just put it on the forehead and it was there for the rest of the night as the bhajans were going on. And in the discourse, Swami apparently made a point. He said, see, that solid metal and diamond or whatever it is, it was materialized in few moments in front of your eyes. That does not thrill you. But the fact that this metal is sticking on that metal is thrilling you.
I remember the exact word that some people in this audience are wondering how that piece of metal stuck to that stone. But they're not wondering how that materializes, as you said, in a matter of few seconds.
In fact, if you look at it, the second or third discourse which we went through, Swami is talking about the seed becoming a tree. And if you look at, I think another beautiful conversation is when somebody asked Swami that how he could build a hospital like this in 6 months, 7 months. You know, it's such a miracle. So Swami's reply was epic, actually. He said, the greatest thing I've ever created as God is the human body. And I don't take more than 9 months to do that. He said, you know, that's so profound. Because if you look at that, you acknowledge the fact that this entire being is actually a miracle in progress.
Absolutely.
Right? We are living through it, and I mean, the more you read science and biology, like scientists, they're lost in awe of how this thing happens, and unfailingly.
Right.
You know, they say that fertilized egg is the size of a printed full stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, and in that is coded when the teeth will come out.
Correct.
You know, when you will grow, when your eyes open, when your hair comes out, and when your hair starts graying.
Right.
You know, everything is coded
programmed
in that, you know, small thing. And that's the greatest miracle. And as you're saying that unless something happens in front of you and your attention is caught and then turned within, probably we, I don't know how many lifetimes we spend without taking note of that.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's a very tranquilized existence. Down to, as you said, even when Swami has to remind us, jolt us into our own. It's not about His divinity. He's reminding us of something, you know, you're not considered. That when you say your existence is limited to yourself. Like, even as you are saying this, you know, where Swami said that the greatest miracle is the creation of a human being and it takes a matter of 9 months. I recall, you know, Kasturiji recounting this incident. He said, this was from the days when Swami used to regularly go over to the Chitravati sands and used to materialize things. So, so much so that people had now started taking that for granted. That, you know, so-and-so date on a Thursday, Swami will take us at so-and-so time to Chitravati sands and we'll, you know, witness some amazing spectacles. And suddenly Swami withdrew that. Like, he, for a very long time, Swami did not go to the Chitravati sands. And actually the devotees were a little dismayed. So they thought they'll approach to, through Kasturi Garu, as to, you know, pray to Bhagwan to resume that. So Kasturi Ji, he goes to Swami and he sees that Swami, you know, he's pacing up and down in his room, like thinking about something. So somehow he makes bold to say that. So Swami first starts by saying, oh, but you know, why do I need the sands of Chitravati? We can as well do it over here. And Kasturiji jumps on that. He says, yes, yes, Swami, we can, you know, there's some construction that is going on. So Swami, okay, but you know, we'll do it right here, but we want to see all this. And Swami realizes or points out to them that actually what they're clamoring for is miracles from the Lord. They want to witness miracles. And then Swami, you know, he says that you are not even aware of my greatest miracle. Mm. And Swami says, that is you. You know, so Kasturiji, he says, when he heard that, it was like a clap of thunder.
Mm.
Just that message, when he realized that they were being enamored of even the small trinkets that Swami was creating, and even though it is coming directly from the divine hands, that is sacred, but even then Swami was reminding them all that you are not even aware of your own divinity. You are missing the whole point of what miracles are all about.
In fact, you know, I think Professor Kasturi writes in the first part of Satyam Shyam Sundaram, going by the same concepts of prajnanam, and Swami saying that it kind of infuses itself throughout all your limbs and all of that. He says, you know, he comes to Swami in the late 40s.
Hmm.
So he's seen Swami perform miracles. He's seen Swami perform some amazing cures, and most of it in public.
Hmm.
You know, even in our times it happened, but the public display was probably not so common.
Hmm.
Right? You know, in front of an audience, Swami would not. Okay. There it was like, as you're saying, in the Chitravati, under the open sky, Swami was doing things. Many number of people were cured of incurable disease. In fact, we were reading about some of Swami's trips. It was so common during Swami's trips that Swami would walk into the crowd, pick up people who were unwell, who had not yet told Swami their problem. Swami would call them for an interview, cure them and send them out. It was a very, very common thing. Swami's North India trips, it happened n number of times. In fact, Professor Kasturi mentions many of them in passing because it happened in plenty. Right, so when you're talking about these kind of miracles, you know, he says that any number of people came and experienced these things and witnessed these things and had such things happen to them. But he said over the years we saw many of them never turning up.
Exactly.
After having experienced this.
Yes.
So if he says that if it's a really experience that has to come, then those 20, 30, 40 people who were there when we witnessed all of this would have never left.
Correct.
He says the reason why they left was not all of them could keep up to the demands of Swami's discipline.
Right.
He says because if Swami is giving you this idea that he is omnipresent and omnipotent, he expects that that knowledge should result in a certain kind of behavioral changes and lifestyle changes.
Right.
He said those people who could not keep up to that discipline of Swami, you know, it was some of them, it was out of their own guilt. They could not come and face Swami, so they never came back after that. So that thing of, you know, knowing one thing and then ensuring that that knowledge is expressed in your words and deeds, I think that is what makes knowledge wisdom.
Correct. Absolutely. Right?
And probably the last point before we conclude, Swami is talking here about the ability of the ant to discriminate. You know, he says that even the ant can separate the sugar from the grains of sand. He puts... I think that again is a very important thing because if you talk of the Bhagavatam speaks about, we were discussing this sometime back, how the Kali Yuga becomes worse by the year and gets deteriorating and deteriorating. So in that, the concept of Bhagavatam is how much ever the times may change and Kali may become very, very dark and the ages might become very, very cruel. He says the divinity within the individual still stays.
Right.
Right, and that divinity has the ability to express itself as discrimination between right and wrong. So he says you could be in the middle of this Kali Yuga, but the ability for you to get yourself out of it is there within each one. And that's what makes Kali Yuga actually, in a sense, a glorious period for the individual sadhaka.
Right. Yeah.
Because you can choose every moment what you do and you can get yourself out.
Got that.
Right? Because Swami is saying here about the ant, but I think the suggestion is quite true for all of us when you look at, I mean, already we feel that, you know, things are going so wrong. How are we going to get out of this mess? How are we going to set this mess right?
Right.
So I think we'll conclude with that. We played only one clip. We'll continue with that discourse next week. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. Thank you, Hari. Most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. A short while from now, you'll be joined by Bishu for the last segment of the day. Do join us again next week at 7:30 for the next episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Dhyasanam.